Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders. Now, these are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, and others who have wonderful, wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdom as well as their tips and actionable advice with you, our audience. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. Excuse me. Today I welcome living sales legend Ben Gay III back to the podcast. Ben Gay has been called a living legend in the sales world, and I'm going to get him to tell you why. In his 40-plus years of professional selling and sales training, he has been the number one salesperson in every organization in which he has ever worked. And he's a powerful speaker, sales trainer, and author to boot. Now, Ben was personally trained by fellow sales legends, and I know you're going to recognize a lot of these names: J. Douglas Edwards, Dr. Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, William Penn Patrick, Zig Ziglar, Merle Fraser, Fred Herman, James H. Rucker Jr., and many, many other sales giants. Now he is one of the most famous, popular, and powerful sales trainers in the world, and he accepts and conducts just 24 live The Closer Sale Training seminars a year, and writes, publishes, and produces the Closer series of books, which I have, by the way, audios, videos, newsletters, and teletrainings, a series that is considered the foundation of professional selling. Good morning, Ben, and welcome back. I am so excited to chat with you again today. And forgive my voice, I am raspy as all get out, and I have to keep kind of muting to cough. So if you hear pauses, that's me just choking a bit. But I'm excited to have you here.
Well, my pleasure. I got that. I don't know what it was. It may have been the flu, but I was violently ill for about 2 days. Three months ago, and then it cleared right up, and except for a cough. And I thought, well, that'll last a week or so, and it lasted the better part of 3 months. So I can empathize with you. My finger's been on the mute button for a long time on any conversation.
Oh, gosh. Well, you're feeling better now, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Feel fine. I felt fine with the cough. It was just aggravating. Something's going around. I talk to people all over the world who have it.
Well, I'm not sick. I almost never get sick because as a high-functioning and very committed introvert, I'm almost never around other people, so I don't catch anything. But our weather has been bizarre. I mean, truly bizarre. In the course of one day, it is not unusual for me to, you know, sleep with the windows open, wake up to a nice breeze, have to close the windows because the humidity is off the charts. I have to turn on the air conditioner to, you know, get the moisture out of the air. So I suspect it's just because the weather cannot make up its mind and I'm not strong enough to close those windows. I like fresh air.
Well, we'll get through it.
We will. We will. So anyway, you have been a guest on the show before, and everybody who is listening now live in the chat room or will be listening down, you know, later in iTunes, go find that interview. It was excellent. And as I was chatting with you in the green room, Ben, my virtual green room, you had mentioned the voice of God, Earl Nightingale. I want you to recap that just a bit, you know, because I have a story about that. I mean, it's really kind of funny.
Well, I can sort of double up on the Earl story. As anyone's ever heard Earl knows that it sounded like God talking to you. And he was a wonderful gentleman and a good friend and wound up working for me as the voice of all of the companies I was running at the time. So I was a huge fan, and I thought life couldn't get much better than being Earl's buddy. So I'm in his office one day when they were on North Michigan Avenue in Chicago. And around lunchtime, Earl stood up and said, "Well, let's go have lunch." He said, "My favorite restaurant's right nearby, and got a buddy I want you to meet." So we walked across the thing, and talk about weather. I didn't think I was going to make it across the bridge to the restaurant. It was so cold, and the wind was coming off Lake Michigan and so on. But we got there, and we walk over to the maitre d' led us to a table. He knew right where we were supposed to go. And as we got to the table, a nice gentleman stood up who today I would recognize and probably everybody else would. But back then he was only on the radio. And so I didn't appreciate who was standing. So he stood up, and as soon as he shook my hand, he said, "Hello, Ben Gay," and began to talk. I thought, my God, it's Paul Harvey. So
you're kidding
I'm
me.
Sitting No, I was well. They were radio competitors in Chicago. Paul was with ABC, and Earl was with WGN, the big gun. And so they had a friendly rivalry, but they appreciated each other's talents. But anyway, I'm guessing 25 years old, in over my head, running companies I had no business running, but I was faking it pretty good. And I sit down. On my left is Earl Nightingale. On my right is Paul Harvey. And they begin talking to me. And it crossed my mind, my God, in a minute, I'm going to have to respond. And when I do, I'm going to sound like Minnie Mouse between these two. So I said, for the first time in my life, my mother's told me, she said, "I wish I was there." Because I said, for the first time in my life, I said as little as possible. One, I wanted to learn, and two, I didn't want my voice compared with theirs, because they both, when they talked, you felt like they were hunched over a microphone with one hand over their ear, you know, the old radio broadcaster thing, because everything was, you know, "Hello, this is Earl Nightingale, and this is Paul Harvey," and I'm going, "And this is Ben Gay." I just felt goofy, but they were so kind.
And you have
to
a great voice.
Well, I have a passable voice, perhaps. Like everybody, I don't like the sound of my own voice when I hear it recorded. But compared to Earl and Paul, I have no voice, nor does anybody else in the world. I've seen a few old-time actors who could do it, but by and large, that was it. So tell me your Voice of God story.
Well, you had mentioned the Voice of God in our last interview. And I don't know why, but you know, you get something stuck in your head and you can't blast it out. It's just there permanently. And that term was in. And of course, I listened to a lot of Earl Nightingale. So when you said that, I instantly understood what you said. But as anybody who knows me or follows me on social media, you know, knows, my office assistants, are felines. And a lot of them are troublemakers. Most of them are troublemakers. And they will be getting into something when I'm in my office, which is at the front of the house, and I have bat sonar hearing. I can hear everything. And all of a sudden, I will whip out the Voice of God from another room. They don't even know where I am, really. And I will say, "Stop that," in the Voice of God. And I can hear paws just hitting the floor or taking off. And they're like, "How?" And I know. And I'll stick my head around the door, and they're looking at me like, "How'd you know?" And it's funny, but I only pull out the Voice of God when I'm about to really get them, and they know that. So, but every time I do it, I think of you. So there you go.
Well,
you're living in
it.
My head and in my house with my cat.
Well, you're making Earl and Paul smile too.
I'll tell you, but I'm a big fan of both of them and yours, obviously. But Paul Harvey, I thought he was a very wise man. I used to, you know, it's you can't find him anymore unless you go on YouTube. And every once in a while, when I just need to feel better about what's going on in the world, I'll go look for Paul Harvey.
He was awful good, and some of his recordings are just legendary. You know, the farm,
mm-hmm.
God made a farmer, and God made a whatever,
right.
And God made a carpenter, and so on. And they're really very grounding. They just bring you back to reality and understand what's important.
They really do. So here you are at 25 years old, and you're sitting at a table with, you know, two amazing men. And you went on to become really amazing in your own right. Did you ever feel at any point, and I think you kind of said you did, you didn't want to speak in front of him, like you were just kind of, you know, an imposter, that you really didn't need to be where you were?
Absolutely. I used to laugh about it. I'm pretty much over it now. There's nobody who is over me, you know, that could fire me or whatever. But in those days when I was running what was then the largest MLM direct sales company in the world, I used to sit in my office and I'd be working, and across, it was a big conference table, and right across the conference table was the door that most people came and went from. And it was right by my secretary, Marty Conley's desk. And I would glance up from time to time and look at the door, because the only person that didn't have to knock to come in was William Penn Patrick, Bill Patrick, the owner of the company. And if the door opened suddenly, I would glance up and I would always think to myself, it's over. He's figured out that I shouldn't be running this operation. I was a high school graduate. Absolutely. I was a high school graduate by the skin of my teeth. Figured out early that speaking was a good idea to communicate your skills. So from the front of the room, I helped enroll a lot of people into that business. Working with my partner, James H. Rucker Jr., the greatest salesman who ever lived, but I was the front man. So based on personality and talking skills and so on, I moved up, frankly, a little more rapidly than I should have. I've often thought, if I had applied for the job, nobody knew me, I hadn't been a successful guy in the field, I hadn't beaten all the other distributors and so on, if I just applied for the job, hi, I want to be president of Holiday Magic Worldwide, I would have been laughed out of the office. You know, high school graduate, no discernible skills, 3 years before that, making $100 a week, putting groceries, you know, cans of food on shelves. My dad was a food broker. And now you're going to be head of this big international company. It wouldn't fly. So I glided in based on personality and speaking skills. And I recommend to all your listeners, develop speaking skills, communication skills. That is the secret. I've helped so many people around the world over the years turn their lives around by just being able to communicate, whether it's to one person or in front of a room or 12 people or 12 or 15,000 people. It just multiplies all the advantages you might have. So for whatever reason, I got there, and yes, I literally feared the door opening. And I used to laugh with Bill about it. And he said, well, someday I may just jerk open your door and yell, you're fired. But he never did. And so we went on. But it was a real fear for a long time. And I suspect a lot of people have that. You sort of have self-doubt. And I didn't have it on the surface where you could see it. But trust me, I doubted my abilities. And it's one of the things I spend a lot of time in seminars now talking about. I'm probably the world's greatest name dropper. Dr. Napoleon Hill worked for me. Earl Nightingale worked for me. J. Douglas Edwards worked for me and so on. And I say worked for me. I rose up to the top of the company and hired them to come in and do various things for us. So it wasn't like they were like I had built a company from the ground up and retained them. It sort of came with a package. If you were anybody that was anybody in the field of sales in those days, you had something to do with Holiday Magic Cosmetics and its subsidiary companies. We had five companies that sold five different products, all using the same marketing plan. But we were it was the place to be. And I had a tough time shaking that thing of, they're going to test me any minute. They're going to test me. I'll tell you a little secret. I have trouble understanding a balance sheet. If you have $1 million in the bank and you have zero debt, I don't understand why one side doesn't say 1 million, the other side say zero. They balance, and I don't understand that. I've sat in many board meetings. We had 125 companies around the world, five different companies, each in 25 different countries, so total up to 125. I would sit in, over several days' time, 125 board meetings. And as they would put down the sheets of paper about each company, and the president would come in, I would open up the P&L statement and flip to the back page, lower right-hand corner. If that figure was not in brackets, they were making money. And the bigger the number, the better it was. I didn't bother reading the P&Ls. And as I said, the balance sheet was just beyond my ability to comprehend. And people said, well, then how'd you wind up running a company like that? Well, speaking skills, communication skills, and the ability to make friends quickly, which comes from speaking and communication skills. What I now teach in seminars is people say, oh, I wish I were there when you were working with Zig or Earl or Dr. Hill or Dr. Peel, or, you know, and they rattle off all these names. And I have to smile inside, Denise, because they were just regular people. They are perfectly, you may not be blessed with a voice like Earl Nightingale, but they were just regular people trying to make a living. I mentioned casually in a seminar one day that one weekend, I don't know how it even came up, but one weekend when I lived in Marin County, our three house guests were Earl Nightingale, Dr. Hill, and J. Douglas Edwards. By coincidence, any one of them would have been staying there anyway if they were in town. It was easier for me to have them as a house guest than drive to a hotel every few minutes. So, but they all happened to be there. And there was a gasp from the audience. Oh, my God. You had all those people under one roof. What was it like? What do you remember? And I said, well, I remember that none of them could shoot pool, which was true.
They are people. Collectively,
they were the three worst pool shots on earth. They were so bad, we spent a lot of time on the various boats, taking them out in San Francisco Bay, because it was easier to talk to them there than try and lose a pool game. And I tried. I played customer pool with them, and I couldn't lose a game. They were so bad. So, and they said, oh, no, but what did they say? And, well, when's dinner? Are we going to do that meeting in Chicago next week or what, you know, things like that. I said, they were just regular guys. They picture, I guess, us sitting around in white robes on the floor in a circle, saying wise, profound things to each other. Earl was a regular guy. He told me, went bankrupt three times between corporate and personal. Dr. Hill, in his personal life, was far from a happy camper. J. Douglas Edwards had terrible insecurities. But in their chosen fields, like me, in my chosen field of being head of a company I had no business being head of, they were able to fake it and put forth a certain persona that benefited them. But we were all, we weren't gurus, we weren't sages yet, that hadn't been hung on us. We were just four guys, and there could have been 10 others like them there that day. The house wasn't that big, but we could have had that many other people. And they were all just regular folks. I have a friend, Facebook friend. I've never met him, but we talk rather frequently, who worships a speaker I won't name, because what I'm going to tell you might demean the speaker, and I don't mean that in any way. But he worships the ground this gentleman walked on. His Facebook page is devoted only to that subject and so on. Well, I knew this gentleman behind the scenes. Great guy, wonderful guy, full of great wisdom, like a lot of people. My next door neighbor's full of great wisdom after a couple of beers. But I'm reluctant to talk to him about this person because anything I say might be taken as criticism or demean his hero in his eyes. He was just a regular guy, like anyone in any audience I speak to. You know, I wish I could have met Zig Ziglar. Why don't you become Zig Ziglar if that's important to you? You don't want to become somebody else, but you can become just as much, just as quickly. And in the field of sales, where I've spent my adult life, it's especially easy because all you have to do is learn how to present things effectively, ask for the order, close sales, and you rise to the top. There's nothing holding you back. There are no income requirements when you start out. There's no educational requirements at all. I've never been asked. People are always surprised I'm just a high school graduate, or at least they pretend to be surprised. Maybe they're not surprised at all. But except in casual conversation after the fact, it's never been a subject. When I started making $40,000 a month in Atlanta in 1965, which would be $400,000 or more today, part-time a month. No one said to me, could I see your qualifications? Could you fill out a resume? All they wanted to know was, could I sell? Could Jimmy Rucker and I sell? And the answer was yes. We outsold everybody in the country, Zig included. So here's the good news. If you're listening to this call, you're free to be as much as you want, as fast as you want, as big as you want. You just have some skill sets perhaps you have to work on, but they're perfectly attainable. I have known well hundreds of people around the world who I guarantee you had less natural talent than your listener, your individual listener does. I'm one of them. I had less talent. And they've risen up. I've a young man that I helped do some training with at the federal penitentiary in Lompoc, California, was an 18-year-old drug dealer when I met him. And he came through my People Builders class there, like so many before had done at San Quentin. And I just saw something in him. So I took him under my wing and taught him how to speak and communicate beyond single syllable words and grunts. And he took off. We adopted him informally, but he calls us mom and dad, and he's our son, one of our four sons. And 3 years ago, I think it was, he graduated second in his class at San Francisco State Law School, and today is an attorney, from 18-year-old drug dealer with a high school education. If I had said to him the first night I met him, you're going to become a proficient speaker and pass the bar and become an attorney, he probably would have run from the room, assuming he'd encountered a crazy person. But it was absolutely true. And it was true of lots of other people over the years. Some of my greatest, they're not my stories, success stories, they're theirs. But some of the ones I'm most proud of were from San Quentin and Lompoc, where I was able to work with people who seemed to be down on their luck or had taken the wrong path, and show them that in the blink of an eye, if they learned how to communicate and have self-confidence, which communication brings, that sort of part of the package, they can be anything they want to be, anything they want to be. And many have. And as I say that, I know Dr. Hill is smiling because that's what he tried to beat into my head when I first met him.
I think I mentioned to you the other day that I sent you an email that I was watching Dr. Hill on Amazon. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Like you pointed out, he was a little stiff. He wasn't all that comfortable. But, you know, his message is timeless. It really is. And I love that we're talking about this because, look, we all have imposter syndrome. I have it. We all have it. It's just part of who we are. It's just how you overcome it. And I think that's the big point that you're sharing here.
I'm going to steal that from you. I've never heard that term, but imposter syndrome is exactly what I suffered from. Yeah.
Exactly, and I've heard it many, many times, and you are welcome to use it because it's so descriptive. I mean, I battle with it all day long. I mean, you know, not constantly, but I have moments in my day where I'm like, really, Denise? Who set you up as an expert? And then the answer comes back, well, you did. So I keep on going.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and until
you have to walk the walk.
Yeah.
So this your son, how can you kind of walk us back to that? Because that's a truly wonderful story, and I'm so glad you shared it. Do you happen to remember any point where you knew that he'd sat up, he was paying attention, and he was going to do it? Was there any point where you just go, ha-ha, gotcha, I've got your attention, now let's see what you're going to do with it?
Yes, I know the exact moment. The public speaking class that I taught at Lompoc was held in their dining hall, not exactly luxurious surroundings, you know, Formica four-seat chairs with the chairs welded to the table so they wouldn't throw them at each other and so on. And I had told him, it took him 3 weeks to get the nerve to come over and introduce himself to me. People kept saying, Lamont wants to come to your class. I said, well, tell him to come on. Well, he feels like you have to invite him. I said, I don't have to invite him. It's over in the cafeteria. I couldn't stop him if I wanted to stop him. And so tell him to come on. Well, would you go over and talk to him? No. Come to me. And so 3 weeks go by. Finally, I hear, I was sitting somewhere and I hear, Mr. Gay, Mr. Gay. I look up and there he is. I said, well, Lamont, we finally screwed up our courage. How are you? He said, I'm fine. I said, are you going to come to the class? And it happened to be that night. He said, I'd like to. I said, fine. And you're going to speak tonight. And I started to say the blood ran out of his face, but Lamont is black. And so if it ran out of his face, I couldn't see it. But he said, oh, I couldn't do that. And I said, yeah, you can, you'll do it. So we get in there, do the little setup thing, whatever went first. And then I said, we've got a new person with us tonight who, rather than wait several weeks like a lot of you have done, he wants to speak tonight. His jaw is dropping as I'm talking. Ladies and gentlemen,
you threw
Lamont
him straight
Bull
into the hot seat.
Yep, yep. Well, I figured if I waited, he might not come back the second time. And so I said, ladies and gentlemen, Lamont Bowen. And Lamont came up front, turned around, had a great voice, far better than mine, sort of in the Earl Nightingale family, but untrained. But he had a deep voice. And much to my surprise, he fired away. I'm here tonight and so on. And he was short on what I call inventory. He didn't have a whole lot to talk about. So he was short on inventory at that moment. But for about 2 minutes, he was as good as any speaker I ever heard. I was thinking of Martin Luther King Jr. And I knew Daddy King, who was a better speaker than Jr. was. But I had flashbacks to them as he started talking. And then about 2 minutes, he turned around and shrugged his shoulders. You know, that's it. I don't have anything else to say. But before he got his shoulders unshrugged, 80 or 90 hardened inmates, convicts, stood and gave him a spontaneous standing ovation. And I remember thinking, man, I'm on to something here. So I started spending a lot of time with him whenever I could. And encouraging him and so on. And then he announced somewhere along the line, I don't remember when it was, and I'm probably sure I would have shrugged it off like, okay, well, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, you know, and so on. I don't want to discourage him. But somewhere along the line, he decided, since he'd been through the criminal justice system the hard way, he wanted to work in the criminal justice system on the winner's side. So he decided he wanted to be an attorney. Well, the only thing holding him back was he had a high school education or a GED. He'd never spent a day in college, et cetera. And I said, well, I'll help you where I can, but, that's start to work and we'll talk in 4 years. Well, he graduated from college in 3 years after he got out. And then he went to law school. And I'm fond of saying we helped him. All we did, we co-signed on his student loan. And he said, I promise you, you will never have to reach in your pocket for a dime. And that was several years ago, and we haven't, and he's an attorney. So all's well that ends well. And I love to talk about things like that because it shows what a person can do if they put their mind to it. But I want to reiterate, he wasn't like some shining star like Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale, or some of the other people we've been talking about. Like them, he was just a normal guy who, you know, the old biblical phrase, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Well, the teachers had been around him for a long time, of course, and he hadn't been listening. But one night he was ready, and I happened to be standing there. Could have been anybody, but I happened to be there. So I get the credit for that. But to your listeners, let me reiterate, if you're struggling in selling or in life, but if you're struggling in selling, the answers are readily available. I'm not pushing my books, but I've written 24 books, but I've written 3 books that are right at the heart of selling. People say, oh, Mr. Gay, I'd give anything in the world to know what you know about selling. I said, well, I got good news for you. I wrote it in 3 books, and so you're about $60 away, whatever it is, $60, $70 away from having what you've always wanted to have. And of course, 90% of them never order because they're just talking about it. But for the few that do, the information is readily available. And, well, I'd be afraid to get in front of people. I understand that. I was terrified. I was once taken from a room in hysterics, laughing because some friends played a trick on me. As soon as I got to the front of the room and I wasn't yet ready to have tricks played on me, And I literally went into a laughing fit, and they came up, got me under the arms, and took me out of the room and plopped me in the lobbies while they went on with the meeting. The gentleman who was introduced, Ern Westmore, the dean of Hollywood makeup artists, was introducing me in New York in front of the biggest crowd I'd ever talked to, and I mean by far, about 5,000 people in the room, and the biggest crowd I'd ever talked to was probably 300 in Atlanta, and not many of those. And he gave a laudatory introduction, pointed to me over on the side of the stage. Spotlight hit me. There's no way of getting out now, and I was thinking about getting out. I literally thought about fleeing the room. But now the spotlight's on me, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Benjamin Franklin Gay III," and dropped dead of a massive heart attack as "third" was still coming out of his mouth. Now, I got 5,000 people in the room, and that cured me. I didn't know it at the time, but that cured me. You could set off an atomic bomb in the audience if I'm up speaking now. And after the dust settles down, I would be right back at where I was supposed to be in my talk and deliver it. Because I figured out speaking, like selling, is a learned skill. Some are more natural at it. Zig Ziglar probably came out of his mother's womb saying, "And another thing I want to tell you," you know, so on. He was unusual, a one in a million personality. But that doesn't make any difference. When we got into selling head to head, I beat him. 18 years younger, zero experience, and I beat him. Because here's one of my great secrets in selling: I come early, I stay late, and I, especially in the beginning, came early, worked late, and worked on weekends. Cute story: when I beat him in a national year-long contest, first prize was a mystery prize, and Bill Patrick later told me it was a mystery prize because he wanted to see who won it, because if the wrong person won it, then they wouldn't have gotten the mystery prize he had in mind. Second prize was a Rolls Royce, et cetera. Well, it turned out first prize was presidency of the company, or being put on the fast track to become president. He decided to get rid of the one he had at the time. So I won that. And I used to kid with Zig. I say, on a bad day, I say, "Zig, here's the deal. Bring me the keys to the Rolls, and I'll give you the keys to the building." And he said, no, you won. So sometimes you get things you didn't really intend to get. But here's how I beat Zig, barely. The contest is over, all but over. We're on the last day. And Zig knew he had won, and the figures were made available to those of us who were in contention, so it looked to me like he'd won, too. That afternoon, wherever he was, he had a victory party. That evening, I had a sales presentation with 400 or 500 people in the room. We closed enough people that night to beat him in the contest. So
you didn't stop just because you thought he had won. You didn't just stop right there and go, "Oh, okay, it's over." You kept on going.
I wanted the money. Two, we had the engagement. And three, I thought, well, you know, this is doable. I didn't know he was having a victory party. I thought he'd be out working too. But I thought, well, if I get more tonight than he gets, then, you know, maybe I'll win. I didn't know he'd quit at noon and started celebrating his victory. So there's, you know, a picture of two people coming around the final turn in a track meet, and 25 yards short of the finish line, one guy starts leaping up and down, holding his hands and taking bows from the audience. The other guy keeps running. Doesn't make the other guy a better runner, but it does make the other guy the winner.
That is brilliant. I had no idea this had happened, but oh my. So basically, you don't stop. You just don't give up. You just keep on going. You get out of your own way, and you just keep working.
Right. The first year I decided I want to make $1 million in commissions and so on. I thought, I wonder how much that is, because Dr. Hill and I had worked out, in addition to whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, perhaps there was more to it. So over a couple of friendly lunches when I argued with him about that point, because as we all know, if Charlie Manson, who's 80 years old in prison in intensive care and probably dying now, a guy I met at San Quentin, if Charlie Manson wants to be an astronaut, he can't be one. I don't care if he conceives it and believes it or whatever. Charlie Manson is going to die in prison, not in outer space. So that's an extreme example, but there are people who have visions and so on who can't do it. So I finally, over having the audacity to argue with Dr. Hill, we settled on whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe it can achieve, so long as it is specific, measurable, and attainable. So when I decide I want to make $1 million a year, like a lot of people, you know, everybody's always saying, I want to double my income this year. What are you making now? Well, I'm not sure. Sort of hard to double what you don't know. But anyway, $1 million a year turned out to be $2,739 and some odd cents per day, 7 days a week. That's what I had to make. Being not real bright, I rounded it up to 2,800. That was my goal, 2,800 a day. And I went to work. And the other thing I set up, having been raised in a golfing family, was each shot stands on its own. The ball you hit in the water is not supposed to affect your next shot. Each shot in the golf tournament stands on its own. No matter what you think's coming, no matter what's already happened, this is the only shot that makes any difference. So my goal was to make $2,800 a day, no matter what I made the day before. So if I missed the day before, I didn't owe the plan $5,600. I owed it $2,800. And conversely, in one 11-day period, I made over $14 million in commission, speaking fees, and incentives with the company. And somebody said to me over the phone when they knew what had happened, they said, oh, well, you're done for years. I said, no, I got to make $2,800 tomorrow. So it didn't make any difference how much I made. Every goal stands on its own. And so you plunge on no matter what. A guy the other day questioned that and said, well, you know, he had made his daily goal at 10 o'clock in the morning, I think, something like that. And he emailed me and said, can I go home? I said, are you nuts?
What?
Of course you don't go.
Why would you stop your momentum? I mean, the guy was clearly on a roll.
Yeah, but he'd met his daily goal. So it's time to go have a beer and celebrate, I guess. I don't know. But I've had days when I made nothing. We had a day not too many years ago when the phone did not ring. And this is back when the phone was where the money came from. Now I go into the office in the morning. It's like Christmas morning. You open up the internet and see what you saw while you were sound asleep. But back then, if the phone didn't ring, you were dead. Pardon me. Our phone didn't ring for 11 days. To the point.
No dial tone?
I
would have been checking dial tone every 10 minutes.
Oh, boy. Listen, I checked it constantly. I even phoned. I'd phone out, phone Gigi and say, honey, how do I sound? She said, you sound fine. What do you need? I just want to make sure the phone's working. Call me. So I'd hang up. She'd call me. And so now we know the phone's working. I talked to telephone operators. Hello, I have a problem. There's nobody phoning. One lady I remember laughing said, maybe you should check your business plan. But anyway, it was just random chance. These things happen. 11 days. Now, at the end of the month, we had our monthly goal. At the end of the month, we hit it. In spite of the fact for 11 days, nothing happened. You do your work. As Nightingale says in The Strangest Secret, just do your work. Do your work and that little more that's worth all the lavishing's sake. Do a little more for the lavishing's sake, that little bit that's worth all the rest. Meaning, to reduce it down to hours, you could, by staying in the office an extra 45 minutes, do as much as the first 8 or 9 hours got you. I could, by holding a meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, instead of celebrating my victory or celebrating my second place, by holding that meeting, I beat the legendary Zig Ziglar, who was by far a better speaker than I was at the time and had somewhat more sales. We started in the same business on the same day in the same room, September 15th, 1965. But he was 18 years older. On the day I was conceived, he was in the Navy. So the reason I know that, I was conceived on December 7th, 1941. My father said two tragedies befell America that day. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and I was conceived. So as a result,
I'm assuming he was being funny.
Yeah, well, my dad was like me. If he was talking, he was kidding. But like all kidding, there's always some truth buried in kidding. But anyway, the point was he had more natural talent. He had more experience. He was a reasonably successful cookware salesperson from Columbia, South Carolina, when he answered the same ad I did in the Atlanta Journal and came down to Atlanta for this interview. There were only two of us in the room. And we both listened to the same presentation. And I didn't beat him on skill. I got close to beating him by working my tail off. And I beat him by one extra meeting. In a year-long contest, from noon to about 10 o'clock at night was the difference.
I have to ask, what did he take away from that? I'm sure there were some lessons there for Zig.
Oh, probably, but we never discussed him. Zig was just, no matter what happened, he laughed. You know, that infectious giggle of his.
Right.
Said, on bad days when I was thinking, how the heck did I wind up being head of this company? I'm not qualified. I shouldn't be here. And this isn't nearly as much fun as working with Jimmy Rucker back in Atlanta, where, by the way, I was making a lot more money. I was, until I got into stock options and so on, I took a 90% cut in pay to come be assistant to the president and then president of the company. So you take a 90% cut in pay, and the roof is falling in, and one time we had to lay off 125 employees. Right before I got there, the business had taken a serious downturn, and somebody said, we'll send out a memo. I said, no, we're not going to send out a memo. I'm going to face them. So I fired in one day 125 people face-to-face. It was probably among the worst days of my life, ranks right up there with when my father died. It was just draining, and I thought to myself, never again. I am never again going to go through this. And that was sort of the start of the big growth of that company. Long hours, early in the morning to late at night, 7 days a week. I was giving 300-plus presentations in front of groups in those days. Now, speakers today, you know, I've had speakers question that and say, well, you can't do that. That's not possible because they haven't given 300 speeches in their life. But that's the pace I worked at. Thanks to the Learjet, I once gave 33 speeches in 11 days. That's three speeches a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner in three different cities. And that's not – I was watching I'm a political junkie watching Trump and Hillary and so on.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Trump was everywhere, even on election
constantly.
Day. He didn't even stop
constantly.
On election day. He was still out there having a rally.
That's right. And look back at the margins. That might have been – you know, it might have been one talk in Wisconsin – that did it. I mean, it may be like I'm working in Zig celebrating. One talk in Wisconsin, if he had not given it, maybe that would have been the difference. So you could certainly name five or six places if he hadn't done that. That would have been the difference. So like him or not, he showed what hustle can do while Hillary was back in Chappaqua writing her memoirs. I don't know what she was doing, but she wasn't working like he was. He reminded me of James Brown. James Brown used to book himself, as you might recall, as the hardest working man in show business. Well, Trump was the hardest working man in politics during that period of time.
I think he still is. You there? It,
well, every morning, yeah. Every morning when I get up and turn on the news, there's Trump holding a meeting, giving a talk, or something. It's almost
I'm
when I was
fascinated
growing up,
by
patterns.
It, you know. I'm sorry. I'm fascinated by the pace at which he works and how structured he is. And like you say, like him or not, there's a lot to admire about his work ethic. And I mean a lot to admire.
Yeah. He was not my first choice. I frankly held my nose and voted for him. He's now our president, so I'm 100% behind him. But one thing, like him or not, he's sort of buffoonish sometimes. Like him or not, you can't fault him on work ethic. He outworks everybody. Look at his staff when they come on to be interviewed. They look like they've been rode hard and put away wet. They're not used to keeping up with anybody at that pace, never mind a 70-year-old.
Again, I think it's fascinating to watch him, and I think there are some lessons there for all of us who are willing to, you know, maybe put aside the dislike or, in some cases, out-and-out hatred, and just watch what he does, how he does it, and apply some of those same principles in your own life. I think it can make a big, big difference for a lot of individuals.
And in selling, which is what my life revolves around, in selling, you're supposed to find out what the prospect needs or wants, hopefully both, and you do that by listening. He picked up the drumbeat of America. He knew that there were a lot of angry, disappointed people out of work or underemployed or whatever, and he listened to them. And it came out. I don't know if you consider him in real life a great salesman or not. He was a promoter and a builder, but he was using great sales technique. Listen to your audience, and it's even better if what they're saying happens to correspond with what you want to do anyway. I hope that that's the case. But listen to your audience and feed back to them what they told you. As I've told you before, my favorite close, I probably use it 95% of the time. We have done all my sales infiltration work, as explained in the Closers Part 2. The last chapter starts on page 257, little plug. I've done my sales infiltration work, so I've maneuvered myself into a position in the sales presentation where I'm able to say, rightfully expecting a positive answer, quote, based on what you've told me, and there are a couple of variations of that based on what we've discussed, based on this, but in the analogy we're using right now, based on what you've told me, here's what I suggest we do, fill in the blank, whatever it is, buy the car, take a trip, you know, whatever. Here's what I suggest we do. Fair enough. And my closing rate when I've gotten into, my overall closing rate is 86%, has been for years. My closing rate when I've maneuvered myself in position to use that close is, I'm guessing, 98-99%. Because I listen, I try to be what was said of Nelson Mandela, I try to be a dynamic listener. And then when we're done, if my product or service solves the problems they've explained to me, I just remind them of what they said, suggest we take action, and then say, fair enough, which is a Southern term I grew up with, but it's a magnificent term because fair enough is hard to say no to. It's either yeah or but I need to know this or that or whatever. It rarely ends a presentation on a negative note. It almost always ends one on a proper note. But as I teach in my material in the Closer series, you got to get in the position to have the right to say that. You know, to carry to the other extreme, you can't walk up to somebody on an automobile sales floor and say, hi, how are you? Based on what I've noticed from 20 feet away, here's what I suggest you do. Buy this car. They would think you were insane. But you can say that 20 or 30 minutes later, knowing you're going to get a positive response. I repeat, selling is a trainable, learnable skill. Can be learned by anybody.
Now, Ben, I think we've discussed this before, but to me, the biggest and most important component of selling, whether you're trying to sell somebody a new, you know, a potential employer for your on your resume, or you know, you're trying to date someone, or you're trying to get it, whatever it is, I have always thought that the biggest and most important component of selling is listening, active listening. You and I have discussed this, haven't we?
Yeah, that is the answer. They will tell you what they want and the conditions under which they want to buy it. If you just shut up, ask some good questions, but shut up. J. Douglas Edwards was famous for a story he used to tell about. Pardon me one second.
Not a problem. I'm doing the same thing. I saw this the other day on Twitter, and I shared it on my Facebook page, and we're talking about this. So I wanted to share it as a very, you know, quick quote, but I thought it was so important. And the quote is, Samson killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass. That many sales are killed every day with the same weapon. Absolutely
exactly.
True.
Well, Doug used to yell in seminars. It was a story that built up to it, and we don't have time for that. But towards the end of the story, he would say, when you ask a closing question, shut up. And then he had a big booming voice, not unlike Earl and Paul and everybody. Shut up. And he'd scream. The microphone would reverberate because it wasn't built to carry that kind of noise. You shut up. And that's a big part of not just a close. He was teaching a specific close, the shut up close. He was teaching a specific, but it's so true of everything. One of the things I'm most proud of in this conversation, you might find it hard to believe because I've talked nonstop, but one of the things I'm most proud of is I have become a listener. Somebody told Gigi the other day that, Gigi being my wife for newcomers, somebody told Gigi the other day, Ben listens so intently, it's almost unnerving. He doesn't break eye contact with you. He stares at you. He nods. You know that he understood what you just said and so on. So that is a learned skill. It doesn't come to me naturally. My natural instinct is to say, yeah, but, and jump in with my input. That one. And the other one is, I don't know. But I'll find out if it's important. In some conversations,
right.
I don't know is enough. I don't know. And I used to think, I hated to say that, especially in selling, because I thought, well, that'll cost me a sale. I'm supposed to know everything. No, you're not. Most of us are ignorant about 99.9% of the facts there are in the world. Most of us, I'm throwing myself in the pot, there are huge industries going on that we've never heard of. We don't even know what they're doing. We don't know the terminology. So to say I don't know, in my opinion, has become a badge of honor. So few people say it, I look smart when I do. And once I learned that trick, that technique, I became more aware of what I didn't know. And it's astounding, Denise. There's so many things I don't know. And the person you're listening to will appreciate that.
That's actually true. I had kind of, when I first started out as, working from my own home and refusing to have a boss. In fact, I rendered myself unemployable, literally. But, I used to think I had to have all the answers. I'm this expert in the virtual assistants industry and I build websites. And I had to really work at knee-jerking and saying, here's the answer. When, I thought I was right, but I may not have been, and I hate to lead people astray. And I find that when I say, I'm not entirely certain on that, or frankly, I just don't know, but I can find out, people appreciate that. They want to
Absolutely.
See you as a human being. They really do. You're not displaying weakness. You're displaying integrity, I think.
I had a dear friend email me yesterday or the day before, and he's been assigned the job. He's in his 70s, great salesperson, but assigned the job of trying to get millennials, younger people, but millennials, on board with the concept of showing up on time, caring about their job, et cetera. And I'm of an age where I'm not terribly interested in that. If I'm selling them, I am. But short of that, I hired you. This is the time you show up. You got a real good story once or twice. We can let that slide a little bit. But if you are known for not showing up, you're fired. I don't care
kidding.
You were taught. I don't care if you got participant trophies and that screwed you up. I don't know or care.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know a guy named Brad who's the expert on millennials.
Millennial expert.
Books about it. Yeah.
He's a friend of both of ours, Brad Zolas.
Yeah, exactly. Liquid Leadership is the book. So I said to Richard, I said, I don't know, and which I know he took as a bit of a shot because he's known me a long time, and in his circles, I'm a guru. I said, I don't know, but I know the guy who does because I have the magic Rolodex. If I don't know the answer to your question, we're two phone calls away from getting it. I know somebody who knows it, or I know someone who knows someone who knows it. Two phone calls max, and I got your answer. So I become the go-to guy, which gives me the option as a salesperson of reviewing a lot of situations. Out of that, I'm not going to make any money. Except, you know, Brad might appreciate it, and Richard might appreciate it, and maybe it comes back some other way. But I'm not going to make any money out of that transaction at all, period. I did it because, A, I didn't know, and, B, I have a Rolodex, second to none.
That is so important. I mean, I've got to tell a real quick story here. Lolly Daskal, many of you may know who she is. She's a big influencer. She writes for Entrepreneur Inc. magazine. I mean, you type in her name, Lolly Daskal, anywhere, and you can't throw a stick on the internet without hitting her. And I've been trying to get her on my radio show for the longest kind of time. Bob Berg actually recommended her to come on my program. And we just could not make a date work. It was really getting frustrating, I think, for both of us. And finally, we landed on a date, and I sent her a note and said, okay, phew, we got this done. I'm so excited. What can I do to help you promote your upcoming book? She said, oh, my God, are you kidding? I said, no, I'm really not. So a couple emails later, I said, look, just, you know, give me a call. And she called me at 3 o'clock that afternoon. And we had the best conversation after literally a month and a half of trying to connect. We finally did. It got on the phone. And then all of a sudden, Ben, I get a note from her and said, Denise, I want to feature you on an article I'm writing on Inc. Magazine. It's coming out today, actually, Ben, and about podcasts. And she, you know, put together a list of 10 podcasts. I'm on there with John Lee Dumas. And honestly, it's just because I said, how can I help you? That's the only thing I can attribute it to. There was nothing in it for me. I genuinely wanted to see if there was anything I could do to, you know, get the word out for her. That's how you do it. That's how you operate.
I believe it's the Bible says what you hand out comes back tenfold, a hundredfold, yea, a thousandfold.
Right.
And it's true. Where most people get messed up in that, especially in selling, is they don't see the immediate return. Even when I just said I wasn't going to make anything out of the Brad Richard interaction, I know I will a year from now, 2 years from now. Brad's up talking in front of a group somewhere and says, by the way, Ben Gay is a friend of mine, and we've done some seminars together. So Ben Gay is a friend of mine, and you ought to get his closers series because everything you need to know about selling is in there. He might not even know, except subconsciously, why that came out of his mouth at that time. But I know it's because I gave him a client that he would have had no other way of ever meeting. And what right. you hand out comes back. You just got to have faith in the system.
You know, I've dealt with a lot of people who will come to me and say, Denise, I've got this spreadsheet. You were talking about spreadsheets earlier. I've got this spreadsheet, and I need to make this much, you know, today and tomorrow, and they boil it down to a numbers game without having any idea that they have to give to receive and receive to give. So once they grasp that concept, life does change, and I've got some case studies that I'm working on for that, but it's truly amazing. Get out of your own way, help other people as much as you can, and don't expect anything in return, even though you know internally that it will come back again. It may be 2 years down the road, but you'll get a return. It's just not you're going to make $500 that day. It's a mindset, isn't it?
It is, and you don't have to know when it comes back 2 years from now where it came from. It's what we talk about in selling all the time, fill the pipeline. If you fill the pipeline with enough stuff, putting people together, helping people, getting known for that, for instance, you could scour the internet and find everything I've ever written. You won't find anything negative at all. I either am positive and supporting, or I'm quiet, one or the other. I can understand being in a bar with three beers in you, blurting out something, but I don't understand the filth and stupidity and ignorance I see displayed on the internet in chat rooms and so on, because there, it took you a little while to type it up. It wasn't something you blurted out, and you had an option of not sending it. So it just amazes me the lengths people will go to shoot themselves in the foot, where all you have to be known as is a pretty nice guy.
Right.
Somebody asked me it's an old thing I probably heard somewhere else, but someone said to me not too long ago, what is your goal when people look at you and so on? What do you want them to know? I said, I want them to think I'm as good a guy as my chocolate lab, Haley, thinks I am.
Oh.
Haley doesn't know anything bad about me. She just knows I rub her and love her, and she's at my feet, sound asleep as we speak. I rub her, I love her, I feed her. If something's wrong with her, we get it handled. So if I look at a prospect, I think, you know, I hope I can get you to like me like Haley likes me.
That is wonderful. Yeah, I would have never thought of that, but that does make sense. I mean, our pets, I mean, they do look at us with love. They really do, what we perceive as love.
Yep.
But they're also not critical of us. They're not hypercritical. You know, they're willing to, you know, give us the benefit of the doubt. And because of that, I think that a lot of us are much kinder and more compassionate to our fur babies than we are our fellow man. And I find that a sad indictment on humanity.
True. And it's something you can not only work on being nice to people and so on, but it's an image thing you can work on. Lincoln said, if you develop a reputation of being an early riser, you can get up at noon. My reputation and my image is probably a bit nicer than internally I sometimes feel, but I've learned how to bite my tongue, count to 20 or count to 100 sometimes and make sure that what comes out is the image of me that I want. And when you do that enough, you even trick yourself after a while. You start becoming more and more of the person that you're projecting. Internally, you become that person.
Yep. Exactly. And I tell people constantly, because you're right, I mean, people kind of depend on the anonymity, if you will, of their keyboard. And I tell them a couple things. Number one, don't say anything on the internet that you wouldn't say in front of your grandmother, which these days may not even be apropos anymore. But the other thing is, the delete button is your best friend. Use it.
Right. Yep.
It's pretty interesting. Ben, we skated right through another 60 minutes. I still have stuff I want to talk to you about. Would you come back again?
You know I will. You just set a time.
I'm not sure I'll ever run out. We will. Thank you. I'm not sure I'll ever run out of things to chat with you about. So you may become a permanent guest. I don't know.
It would be my honor, and you're a pleasure to talk to. You actually listen.
Thank you.
And you prepare. You know, when I talk to you, I'm always aware that you prepared for the interview. You didn't come skating through the door at the last second, flop down in front of the microphone and hope it works. So that's a sign of a real professional, and I admire it.
Well, that would be incredibly disrespectful of me, and I would never do that to my guests.
Many do.
Listen, oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I find that sad.
Many do.
That is sad. Listen, before we leave, though, Ben, I want to let our audience know that in our first interview, you went into a lot more detail about your first day on the job with Zig Ziglar. It was a wonderful story. And I remember having to mute because I was cracking up. I mean, I was like, part of me was going, no way. And the other part was just laughing. It was a great, great story. So our audience, please be sure to listen to that. You can find, you know, just go to iTunes and type in Ben Gay, and you can find it there. Ben, you had mentioned that you have an event coming up. Go ahead and tell our audience about that real quick.
Well, it's just a little heads up. If you want to know about it and with names, dates, and places, make sure you're registered at my website, which is bfg3.com. B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the numeral 3.com, because that's where I announce everything, any live seminar I'm going to do that's open to the public. And the reason I'm doing that instead of giving you specific dates is it's going to be in San Francisco in late April or early May. I haven't decided yet because the hotel I've used for this seminar for years, the Radisson, I called them the other day. They're no longer the Radisson. And they took the world's best meeting room and turned it into a game room with ping pong tables.
Oh.
So I've got to find, I use Fisherman's Wharf for a reason. I've got to find another hotel. There's plenty, but I want to find a good one that's walking distance from the restaurants and everything. But as soon as I can lock that up, I'm going to announce it on my website. Be sure you're registered there, and then you get a private thing. But late April, early May, I don't know what edition it is, the 800th edition of my public speaking class over the years will be held. limited to 40 people, and it's one-on-one. You're not trained in a room with 1,000 people watching other people work. You'll be working with me, and I will be one-on-one with you for 3.5 days. So it can be, if you're ready, a life-changing experience, and I would love to have anybody that is smart enough to listen to you. I would love to have them in the room.
Oh, thank you. Listen, you mentioned the closers too. You were so gracious. You sent me your books. They have pride of place. I have a bookcase in my office. I have bookcases everywhere. But the one in my office is dedicated only to books that are written by my clients or written by people that I have interviewed. And I've got a ton of them. And I have to tell you, I never, because you wrote these beautiful notes in them, so I didn't even crack the spines on those. What I did do is go order the same books so I could mark them up without any. Yeah, I mean, it was like, I can't mark this up. So my duplicate books, you ought to see them. They're fat. They've got sticky notes in them. I can't even close them. I've got yellow markers, and they're fantastic books. So tell people where they can find those books.
Same website. Go to a www, of course, bfg3.com. That's my website. As soon as you get there, a little drop-down thing will come down. That's where you put in your name and email address to register so I can tell you about the seminar. But also behind that are all the normal things, products, contact information. Just click on products and the closer series, including Sales Closing Power, a book I wrote for J. Douglas Edwards after he died, for his family after he died. He never wrote a book, but I did it from my personal notes of being his buddy and from his live seminar recordings. So between the Closers Part 1, the Closers Part 2, and Sales Closing Power, Doug and the book I did with Doug, between those three books, everything that there is to know about selling, I don't care how you sell, the internet, whatever, you still got to go through the steps. Everything that I know about selling, which is about as much as anybody knows about selling, thank God to my mentors and friends, is in those three books. So like I said, when people say to me, Mr. Gay, I'd give anything in the world to know what you know about selling, well, you're about $60 or $70 away from making that come true. Get the three books, read them, and like you did, mark them up. My original copy of The Closers is sitting right here on my desk, held together by a fat rubber band, and I've been offered $10,000 for the book because then they get all my markings up and underlines and notes in the margins and so on, and I turned it down. A bone of contention with Gigi to this day, because she said, we've got plenty of them in the warehouse. You know, I said, yeah, but you don't have that one in the warehouse. So there's the answer. You want to learn how to sell.
That's an artifact, actually. You know, that's going to become an artifact one day. So, yeah, hang on to that thing.
You'll be able to tell when I die, Denise.
She'll auction it.
Yeah, it'll be up on eBay.
Ouch.
You don't have to wait for my funeral announcement. Just when you see it on eBay, go, my God, he croaked.
Oh. Tell her to call me first.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Well, Ben, thank you so much for being with me here today. I love talking with you. I think you are just a fabulous, fabulous person. And the depth of knowledge and wisdom that you're willing to share is just so enjoyable. And I know our audience really appreciates the takeaways as much as I did. And seriously, I do want you to come back again multiple times. I mean, you've got so much to share that I think it would almost be a disservice to my audience if I didn't talk you into being kind of a semi-regular guest. So be prepared.
You know how to reach me, and I rarely say no.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available in about 15 minutes. And I'm talking to the people in the chat room, of course. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffith and Ben Gay III. And I will see you next week. Ben, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You can find Denise Griffith at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.